The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is a time of the insoluble problem in which you live, problems that are absolutely so inconceivable that we can't even imagine their proportions. And the average person simply doesn't even like to think about them today. Because you have never before taken a real good broad look at all of the conditions on this earth today and at exactly what the problems really are and what the solutions are. You're being conditioned by world leaders today to get used to living in a world where there are no solutions, they say. Insoluble problems and yet no solutions. What are some of the insoluble problems of this day in which you live? Number one, perhaps it seems more remote than anything could from us in our modern Western world, and that's the population explosion. Anyone who seeks to define the population explosion is doomed to a sort of a sense of bafflement, because to really understand the population explosion is all but impossible. And yet, with agonizing regularity, more and more people are being added to this Earth's population than the Earth can support. And I mean to tell you, that problem all by itself, though it's difficult to realize, I admit, pales into insignificance all the other problems of mankind. Now think about it for a moment. If we were all the same race, if we were all the same color, if we were all the same religion, if we had the same language, if we had the same politics, if, in short, we had none of the problems that seemingly are the big problems confronting mankind today, the simple pressure of people all by itself would be virtually insoluble. And according to one set of seers who look at it and tell you, looking at the population clock at what is happening to this earth today, with a growing number of people and the lessening amounts of food to feed them, and this is so true in underdeveloped countries, especially in Central and South America, in Asia, and, well, take communist China, where one quarter of all the population of the earth lives. This world today is in the midst of a giant population boom. There's a little light on top of a tower in Washington, D.C., where every few seconds it flashes that another baby has been born. If it were a clock that was timing the rate of the explosion of the population around the world, it would have to flash at least four times a second. And a death clock, if you could have such a thing, would flash about two times a second. So in other words, people are dying at the rate of about two times a second, and they're being born at the rate of four per second. Now, as I said, to define it's practically impossible, but think of it this way. Every single year, there are being added to the world's population enough people to comprise the total population of France, of Belgium, and the Netherlands all put together. Now, this is only a part of it, as I've said. And yet, according to one set of seers, if we had no other problems, the world would be headed for disastrous food wars, with depraved, animalistic, bestial human beings struggling and fighting for means of survival. If we had no religious difficulties, if we had no racial problems, if we didn't even disagree in anything. Now, that's an incredible thing to say, because we disagree in practically everything. You can't discuss anything but maybe the weather and possibly not even that, but which you will find people disagreeing with you. And so when we say we're living in a time of insoluble problems, perhaps that word isn't sufficient to describe it. Right behind that of immediate consideration to most people is the stockpiling of hydrogen and nuclear bombs. So that today we talk in terms of overkill. We're told today that there exists enough hydrogen and atomic weapons stockpiled to more than kill all humankind 44 times. And as one Briton said, when once would be quite enough. After all, you only have one world and one population upon it. That is one preoccupation of many people that seems to be one of the biggest problems they can possibly imagine. We live under the cloud, the threat of a burgeoning, mushrooming explosion of a giant hydrogen attack. And people have got the jitters. Well, what's happening as a result of the insoluble problems? I'll tell you what's happening. People are simply refusing to think about it. People's reactions today are evidenced everywhere around you, from the price-rigging executive to the sick kid, to LSD and the desire to escape reality and to deny conditions really are the way they are. And so most people sort of use a protective mechanism of escapism. We try to escape through travel. We try to escape through entertainment. We try to escape because we're out of a fear, perhaps a denial of the present, because we simply cannot define it. We can't find a solution for it. We don't know what's going to happen. And the average person simply tells you, I don't like to think about it. And that's exactly what most people are doing. They're not thinking about it. Let me tell you why they're not thinking about it. Because they're not convinced there are any answers, that's why. Because they're being conditioned to failure before they start, that's why. Now, according to one set of prognosticators, the world is headed for the most wildly optimistic era you could ever imagine. In the eyes and the mind of this set of seers, the world is headed for a gigantic Disneyland of ever more assorted gadgets and playthings by which you can have more leisure time and less work, more play, more excitement, more thrills, more sports, more of everything. This glittering glamour world of science, of technology, and of industry tells you that you can have, well, sort of like the world today is, except just much more so. Everything is going to be more so. A Disneyland of laxity, of pleasure, of ease, of excitement, and of entertainment. A dwindling work week. And in the meantime, of course, people would want a higher guaranteed wage. We would want more leisure and more playthings to occupy our leisure time. Now, in this look at the world of tomorrow in the eyes of science, industry, and technology, nearly always they have to admit that we have all the physical problems that beset us, so they talk about your liver and your heart, and they tell you that maybe the time is going to come when they can take yours out and give you somebody else's. And when you read some of these predictions, like the one that came out not long ago in the U.S. News and World Report about 1990, or people who write articles about the 2000s, or the world of tomorrow, the world that's going to come, they always tell you, in effect, that the world you can expect for then is going to be just like today's world, except, as they always hasten to add, more so. Now, you know, when you really take time to think about that, it's almost like saying, what are they trying to tell you? You mean to say that we in this Western world of 6% of the population of Earth can successfully shut out of our minds and out of our consciousness the fantastic problems of all of the rest of the world, these things I've mentioned already, such as the population explosion, the stockpiling of hydrogen and atomic weapons, the insoluble, the deeply divisive racial, political, and religious problems that divide mankind. Forget all of this. Forget every last bit of it. Forget the emerging third power bloc in Europe. Forget about burgeoning, reindustrialized Japan. Forget about one quarter of the human race in communist China. Forget about the problems of the Cold War. Deny every last bit of this and sink down into a ready-made daydream of glamour, of a Disneyland gadgetry age of pleasure and playthings. Well, this is what they're saying. They're saying it's going to be just like today's world, except more so. I heard a speech that I well remember. In Pasadena, California, it was the national president of the Chambers of Commerce in the United States, and he talked about our giant high-rise apartments, our 50-story dwellings where we would have a 25th-story shopping center. And in this cigar smoke-choked room in which he spoke with practically anybody who was anybody in Pasadena attending at the Huntington Sheraton Hotel, I remember him chuckling over his cigar as he said something about, if you have a view of the ocean among all those other high-rise apartment dwellings, it would be a beautiful view. That is, if he sort of chuckled, you could see it through the smog. You know, we sort of laugh about the problems today because we don't know what else to do. Like today's chuckle in a recent newspaper told the fellow who's fighting the freeway traffic getting back and forth to his job, you know, if traffic gets any thicker, he said, what you may have to do is to get a reservation to make a left turn. And so when you try to define the world the way it is and you listen to some of these articles about the broad, wonderful claims of the way the world is going to be, that is the world of science, of technology, and of industry, and then they tell you it's going to be just like our world, but more so, it's about all you can stand. Because let's try to analyze it for a moment. If it's more so, are they trying to tell us that means more hippies? Do they mean that means more demonstrations, more beatniks, more crime, more dissolution of morals, more destruction of the home, more violence? Does it mean more wars like Vietnam? Does it mean more of everything? Oh, that's what they tell us. And they tell us that at best we can hope for today is a sort of a postponement of the fateful day. So, you know, you try to put it all together and it seems to be almost impossible. Because it seems like every one of these predictions take only a small, minor part of the problem. and they look at just a part of that minor part. And they try to analyze that one specific problem. Maybe it's in the area of public health, or maybe it's in the area of traffic jams, or of our growing giant megalopolises of our huge festering scabs we call cities, where you and I both know that you don't venture out of your home without a sort of a protective mechanism of your own, where you know that your wife and your daughter are not safe in many areas of your town where you live right at this moment. And every single time you hear the news, in any of the news media, it's sort of a grisly, ghastly chronicling or cataloging of the latest murders, the latest horrible butcheries, the latest sensational multiple murder or sensational sniper case, or the latest little three-year-old blonde-headed girl who got kidnapped on her way home, or wandered off and became lost in some lurking depraved idiot on the fringes of society who probably has two or three known convictions has grabbed this little girl and she has now disappeared. No one knows where she is. This is the way the world is. And so when they analyze it, they might be talking about traffic. And so they tell you about the giant freeways. Maybe we're going to stack them far deep in the future. And we'll be able to get from A to Z with a lot more ease, a lot faster, with a lot more exciting automobiles. One prediction talked about, if you can imagine this, especially in Los Angeles, the time when practically everybody would be able to have a helicopter on his front yard. Now, for anybody fighting the freeway traffic, when you try to analyze these predictions for the future, let me tell you that I'm not kidding. I'm talking about serious men like from the Hudson, New York, think factory there along the river. Serious men who are talking about freeing up the urban areas and about, oh, the entire panorama of different life in this Western world, of the kind of a glittering, wonderful world they're going to provide for us. I'm not talking about a pack of beatniks who don't really know what they're talking about and aren't seriously planning for the future, but about men who do plan for the future. And so when you analyze what they're trying to say, this thing of traffic, for example, the way we have it today, and the idea of a helicopter on everybody's front yard, can you begin to imagine what it would be like to stack up helicopters in a long line waiting to deposit passengers atop a high-rise apartment dwelling or an office building in downtown Los Angeles or some other great city? Can you begin to imagine the complexities of those problems? Civil or private aviation is increasing by leaps and bounds today. More and more people buying airplanes, more and more people using airplanes. And you may have seen recently the plans for the greatly enlarged, fantastic, new Los Angeles International Airport of going into a deep subterranean cavity for about 30,000 automobiles and several decks above and way up on top, all the super jets with their 300 to 500 passengers coming in and roaring out on schedule. And then helicopter traffic to all parts of this giant sprawling megalopolis of ours. Well, when you really take apart some of these statements and you wonder what kind of a world would it be, you begin to wonder, are these people really, are they really kidding us, or do they know what they're talking about? Because they never tell you exactly what kind of world it's going to be for you and your family and your children. They tell you what the machine might be like, but not what the people might be like. They tell you what the world might be like, but not what we're going to be like. And it seems that they shut out of their minds Vietnam, the Congo, Yemen, Aden, the Jew-Arab crisis, the Cold War, divided Berlin, communism, the always undercover latent problem of Formosa and the Pescadores of Nationalist China and Red China. It seems that they deny these things. And so the world seems to be divided between two sets of seers or prognosticators. And these tend to oscillate between the wildest optimism, the most unbelievable and incredible optimism about a giant Disneyland, as I've said, to play in, denying all the other problems, or like the Sir Bertrand Russells of the world, they might tell you there isn't much hope. They only give you a hope of a continuing struggle for existence, but failing in the end. They only condition your mind to lack of success and to failure, and to sort of tell you that the most we can hope for is to sort of postpone this fateful day when we all perish in the flames of this world. So you have the two ideas. But trying to appraise, as I've said, this present world, and to appraise it accurately and correctly is bound to baffle almost anyone, because even to obtain the facts and to get them all and to put them together in a calm look is difficult at best. But that's precisely what I intend to do on the world tomorrow, is take a good, long, calm look at all of the problems that confront mankind today, beginning with the social order, talking about the political problems, though it won't get political, talking about the military and the scientific problems, about the sociological problems, the problems of education, all of the problems, and then talking about all of the predictions on the part of anybody who is practically anybody that has something to say about the future, whether it's President Johnson, whether it is a university professor, whether it's Dr. Page, Dr. Osgood, whether it's Dr. Teller, the father of the H-bomb, whether it's the leaders of all of mankind today, to look at every bit of this and then to give you the absolutely true and documented step-by-step plan for a greater, a broader, and a better world, a world of peace and of prosperity and of plenty for all mankind. And there does exist just such a plan. That plan has already been approved. It's been approved by higher authority. It's been carefully gone over. It's going to work. It's a plan that really makes sense, and you can analyze it and see it in the booklet that I'm going to announce at the close of this program. It is absolutely free of charge, where you'll find out a great deal more as to just what I'm all about, what this program is all about, and exactly what I'm trying to tell you. Now to begin, let's begin with the population explosion. This seems to be a vague, far-off thing to most people, and most people are sort of frightened by it, and so they tend to ignore it, and it seems to be way off somewhere. But let's talk about the United States just for a moment by way of refreshing our memory about what is the meaning of the population explosion. You see, you live in a time of dynamic change, not only of more and more populations, but of the moving and the mass exodus of populations from one place to another. People are moving from the country to the city and from the city to the country. It's been estimated about 47 million Americans are going to move and change their location in this one year. So people tend to mass together. So we have urban renewal and civic redevelopment programs. We've got all these programs to try to decentralize our sprawling cities of today. We hope this is going to solve the crime problem. We hope it's going to ease some of the pressures of city living that seem to press in upon us and give people all kinds of headaches and psychoses and night sweats and a preoccupation with crime and violence, and maybe lead to some horrible act of crime and some explosive blow up in the home. And so not only do you have a sort of a dynamic change among populations, but you have a fantastic increase in population, and that increase is far more rapid in the underdeveloped countries than it is the so-called have nations. I have in my pocket a little booklet that is put out by the Hugh Moore Fund in New York City. It's called Famine Stalks the Earth. It's a rather frightening booklet. This was the booklet that led to a single one-page ad that was in the Wall Street Journal. It was a sort of an open letter to the President of the United States. And the title of that ad was Famine Stalks the Earth. Now, Dr. Raymond Yule, who was a former advisor to the government of India, said, and I quote his words in this booklet, "The world's on the threshold of the biggest famine in history." And he said, "If present trends continue, it seems likely that famine will reach serious proportions in India, Pakistan, and China in the early 1970s. Latin America will fall in this category," he said, "by 1980. Now, this is 1967. So when he says this is going to happen by the early 1970s in India, well, you read about it already. Did you know, for example, that recently we had amassed the largest peacetime armada of ships, over 600 seagoing vessels, that has ever been assembled since some of the massive invasion and attack waves of United States and British and Allied shipping in World War II? The largest peacetime armada in all of history was plying the oceans back and forth to carry United States wheat from our government reserve bins, which are now all but totally empty, incidentally, to India. The only problem being, as I'll go on to show you, that about 50% of all of those millions of bushels of wheat never got to the hungry mouths for which they were intended. Now, as I've said, to appraise the population explosion, you have to understand exactly the number of people there are on the earth and the amount of acreage it takes to feed them and exactly what is food production along with population, and are the two keeping pace. I had a letter from a fellow one time in the New England states in the United States. He said, "Population explosion? What's this guy talking about?" The world tomorrow, incidentally, is on continually every single day. You can probably hear it two or three times a day where you live. And the radio log is in the Plain Truth magazine, a free magazine. I'll tell you about it at the close of this program, which you can read, and we'll show you where you can hear the world tomorrow daily on radio in your area. But he said, "There's no population explosion." I guess he'd looked at an atlas, at a population distribution map. And he said there's all kinds of room. I guess he had the idea that I meant by this that people are stacked around here like sardines. My friends look at it from factual information. Only 7.7% of the entire acreage of all of this earth is tillable. Now, you see, about 15% of the entire land area of the earth is inhabitable. In other words, most of it is too steep. It's too up and down. It goes without saying that desert areas might have real rich, fertile soil, but they've got no rain. It might also go without saying that the rainforest areas of the Amazon jungle, the Mato Grosso, Brazil, and so on, seems to have vast areas where people don't live, and you'd think, well, there's plenty of area for expansion of mankind. No, you're wrong. There's no soil there. Recent surveys by very shocked people in the government have uncovered that all of those millennia, I guess you could say, of constant heavy deluges of tropical rains have completely washed away the soil from the vast rainforests in the humid and the tropical areas of this earth. Think of those facts again. About 15% of the earth is inhabitable. People live on about 15% of it. And about 7.7%, 7 7/10%, not even 8% of it, is tillable. Now, the Aswan Dam is a case in point. The Aswan High Dam in Egypt. I didn't go down there when I was in Egypt last year, but it was a pretty long trip. But I was in Egypt, and I was at the Suez Canal and did some on-the-spot World Tomorrow programs from there. And I'm probably going back again in a few months to Egypt. But the Aswan Dam, which was a major political consideration when it ended up that Russia was going to help Egypt provide the money and the wherewithal to support it, was hailed as a real solution for the population explosion in Egypt. But the facts are that by the time of the total completion of the Aswan Dam, the additional acreages made available to Egypt for food production are not going to, in any manner, shape, or form, solve the food problem, because by the time of the completion of the Aswan Dam, there will be less acres under cultivation, proportionate to population, than there were at the beginning of the project. Now, I could say that again in different ways, but do you get what I mean? Here is a giant dam damming up one of the world's most famous and the longest and so on, the most ancient and well-known river on the face of the earth, the Nile. And here they're going to be able to cultivate multiple hundreds of thousands and eventually perhaps millions of acres. And it's going to solve this food problem, is it? No, it's not. It's not going to solve a thing. By the time they're finished, they not only will have stood still, they will have gone backward, because there will have been more people born. So that by the time the dam is finished, proportionate to the population, there will be less food per mouth than there was at the time the dam was begun. Now, maybe I can put it to you other ways in following programs on the World Tomorrow about the population explosion. But we're being warned now today that either we find methods for increased productivity and also to stabilize production growth, or else we are headed for a disaster of unprecedented magnitude. And it is another of those problems that the world is calling simply insoluble. Now, can you imagine that 4 years from now, there will be 300 million more mouths to feed? Just 4 years from now. And most of them hungry. Now, of course, hunger brings strife, and strife brings turmoil. The world population is increasing at such a rate, well, to tell you exactly, it's about 8,000 an hour, or approximately 70 million every single year. That's a number equal to the population, as I said, of France, Belgium, and the Netherlands all taken together, added to the people living on the earth. And a quarter of the population, as I've said, live in China alone. Mexico's population is going to double in the next 2 decades, in exactly 20 years. Now, these are inescapable statistics. I don't care about medical discoveries. I don't care about increased education. I don't care about the religious problems. I don't care about race and about language. Forget all of these other problems that divide mankind today. All by itself, the population explosion is the biggest problem confronting mankind. And food production is not keeping step with this rocketing population growth. It's a problem labeled insoluble. And population in most hungry countries is growing much faster than in the opulent of the have nations, as I've said. What is the solution? Nobody seems to know. I think behind the scenes, a lot of people actually expect A nuclear World War III, that sort of lemming-like mankind is going to dive over the precipice into his own virtual self-annihilation and so deplete the population of the Earth that maybe he can sort of start all over again. Well, that's not a very good and a very likely solution so far as you and I are concerned, is it? Most people simply do not look for mankind to survive, and most people just don't like to think about it one way or the other. And the reason they do is because they sense a sort of a defeatism when they try to analyze or to define the world in which they live. Now, the way the U.S. News and World Report put it was, unless a strong hand from someplace comes to more or less pull us out of our inextricable jam, there's not much hope for mankind. Well, there is hope, and I'm going to show you where that hope is. Because there is a solution, and you can analyze this age in clear, definable terms, and you don't need to run from it. You don't need to play hide-and-go-seek of hiding your eyes from reality and kidding yourself it doesn't exist and then seeking your own pleasure and entertainment and trying to deny the reality that's going on all around you. Most of the big world thinkers tell you world government is the only solution. That one world ruling authority, one central governing authority is the only solution. And yet others turn around and say, yes, but you're talking about a fantastic, super colossal police state, a big brother society. This is utterly impossible. You can't have a world like that. And so they again end up in an absolute blank wall, going nowhere, having no solutions to offer. Well, I've got solutions. Not that I have them, but I can show you where to get them. And they're contained in a booklet that is called The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And the World Tomorrow booklet does exactly what I'm telling you I'm going to do on this series of programs, analyze and define this world the way it is today. Make head and shape and sense and meaning and weight and form out of it. Show you exactly how to understand it, how it got this way. You didn't make it this way, but here it is, and where we go from here. This booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it. It's full color. You can read it in one sitting. And coming inside of it is a sort of a could-be newspaper. It's a look at the kind of news you could be reading in the world tomorrow and that you will be reading if you live on over into it. It's a look at today's world and a look at the world tomorrow the way it really will be. You'll be astounded. You'll be glad you wrote for it. And it's absolutely free of charge. There's no price. It's free of charge if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California, for your free copy. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.